Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to GHCL's conference call hosted by Emkay Global Financial Services Limited. As a reminder, all the participant lines will be in the listen-only mode and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Meet Vora, Emkay Global Financial Services Limited. Thank you and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us on GHCL's Q2 FY26 results conference call. I would like to welcome the management and thank them for giving us this opportunity to host them. We have with us today Mr. R.S. Jalan, Managing Director, Mr. Raman Chopra, CFO and Executive Director of Finance, Mr. Manu Jain, General Manager, Investor Relations and Finance. Before we begin this call, I would like to point out that some statements made in this call may be forward-looking and a disclaimer to this effect has been included in the earnings presentation shared with you earlier. I shall now hand over the call to the management for their opening remarks. Thank you and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Meet. Welcome to GHCL's earnings conference call for the second quarter and half year ended 30th of September 2025. Our results and investor presentation have been uploaded on the stock exchanges on our website as well. I shall commence with the thoughts on the soda ash market. The domestic market demand growth remains healthy and we saw year on to date demand growing by around 5%, driven by various end user sectors. However, the market continued to be oversupplied. This is primarily due to high volume of cheap imports, which are continuing at a run rate of similar to the Q1, at approximately around 85,000 tons per month. This has impacted realization for the domestic industry for the moment. We therefore maintain a cautious price outlook, therefore, in the next one or two quarters. On this front, a significant development is the recommendation of anti-dumping duty on soda ash by the DGTR. This is now awaiting clearances from the Finance Ministry. While it is early to comment, this may provide some respite and help restore a level playing field against predatory import pricing. Moving on to the global soda ash market dynamics, the overall supply situation that we highlighted last quarter has continued. Moreover, China's domestic year till date demand has declined by around 2%. Year on year, and it has started to export soda ash, adding to the existing global supply. Demand in the most of the Western market remain volatile and uncertain due to the ongoing geopolitical situation. As a result, price continue to remain under pressure worldwide. Through this adverse market conditions, we have maintained focus on our driving best-in-class operation. In the medium terms, we are diversifying our business mix where you will see the positive contribution to earning from initiative in the bromine and vacuum salt. We are placed favorably in the long term as well with plan to commission greenfield expansion soda ash. In the immediate term, we continue to benefit from the structural operational efficiencies and focus cost optimization efforts we have previously established. These measures are sustainable and continue to support our margin even in this difficult pricing environment. I must also appraise you that the company undertook a planned maintenance shutdown which started in the last week of September and has been successfully commissioned in the early October. Which is necessary for the long-term health, this did have some impact on the production volume and added to our overheads in the Q2 results. Reflecting our confidence in the long-term value, strong balance sheet and commitment to shareholders, the board has announced a shareholders buyback program for 300 crores under the tender offer route. We believe this will optimize the capital structure and create further value for our shareholders. Finally, on our future prospects, we remain very optimistic about India. Soda ash demand is directly tied to India's robust global story We also see accelerated growth coming from new applications like solar, glass, which are expected to ramp up starting next year. On our diversification and growth plan, bromine and vacuum salt projects are progressing, and commissioning is on track to happen in the early 2026 quarter four. For our greenfield soda ash project, the progress has been slower than our expectation, and we are taking appropriate steps to address this. This remains a significant long-term strategic investment that will deliver sustainable, substantial operational and financial gain. While this challenging time is transitionary, our operational efficiencies and diversification will be permanent. We have built a solid leadership position, and we are confident in our ability to navigate today's challenges while building long-term sustainable value. Thank you for your continued trust and support in the GSCL. I now hand over the call to Raman to walk through the financial numbers.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon, everyone, and a warm welcome to our earnings call for the second quarter and the half year ended 30th September 2025. Our performance demonstrates the resilience and the benefits of our structural operational efficiencies, which helped us navigate significant pricing pressure seen across the industry. I will now walk you through the key financial highlights. Revenue for the quarter stood at 739 crore compared to 810 crore in the corresponding quarter of last year and 823 crore compared to Q1 of current year. This decline reflects the tough market condition worsened by increased cheap imports, which adversely impacted our realizations. EBITDA for the quarter stood at 175 crore compared to 228 crore in Q2 of FY25 and 225 crore in Q1 of this year. We reported an EBITDA margin of 23.8% in the current quarter. On a Q&Q basis, the EBITDA margins declined by 360 basis points, mainly due to the fall in realizations. Our overhead costs were also slightly higher due to plant maintenance activities, and we expect these to normalize going forward. Our ability to protect profitability even in this environment is a direct result of our deep-rooted philosophy of cost control and operating efficiencies. PAT for the quarter stood at 107 crore compared to 155 crore in the corresponding quarter of last year and 145 crore in Q1 of this year. This demonstrates our ability to respond dynamically to market conditions and partially mitigate the impact of softer prices on our bottom line. Next, our half-yearly cash flow, we generated 313 crore in cash profit after tax. We deployed 185 crore towards growth CapEx, mainly for our new diversification projects of bromine and vacuum salt. We also paid 115 crore as dividends and repaid 22 crore in loans. A reduction in the working capital released 57 crore, thus resulting in an overall net cash generation of 43 crore rupees for the first half of the year. Our balance sheet remains very strong, with a net cash surplus of 1,047 crore at the end of half one FY26. This financial agility supports our strategic CapEx execution and provides significant growth headroom. GSCL has announced its third share buyback program to buy back equity shares from its shareholders for rupees 300 crore under the tender offer route. This shall increase value for shareholders by distributing surplus cash and by improving the EPS and the return ratios. With this, I conclude my comments and would now request the moderator to open the forum for question and answer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. We may also request participants to limit their questions to two to three per question so that every participant gets a chance for their question to be answered. The first question comes from the line of Jainam Ghelani from Swan Investments. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for this opportunity. So, sir, I just wanted to know what was the volume loss that we had due to the shutdown that we had taken at the end of September?
Hi, good afternoon. This volume loss, primarily this will happen, some amount of small amount has happened in the last, in the second quarter, but some volume loss will be there in the October. So most of the volume loss will happen in the third quarter.
So would you be able to quantify it? Like, what could be the quantity for the same, please?
Approximately around 22,000, approximately 21,000 to 22,000, approximately.
Okay, sir. And so, as you mentioned that we are going to commence our CapEx, so what could be the contribution that we could expect in FY 2027 from the bromine and vacuum salt plants, as well as what could be the margins for the same?
You see, basically, both these projects put together, we are expecting that the full benefits should come in the next years, and that probably will give us around 45%, around 40%-45% of the EBITDA margin in this. And absolute number should be in the range of around, maybe around 70 crore-80 crore extra EBITDA will be there. Extra EBITDA will be there.
Okay. And sir, what is the decline in pricing year-on-year for us in soda ash?
Around 9%.
Sir, when we indicate, you started with the indication that the domestic soda ash growth has been in the range of 5%, and despite the MIP in place, we haven't seen any significant benefit of the overall realization. So how shall one look at the near to medium term demand growth, which segment will probably we are banking on? And in terms of the pricing, do we still feel that the pressure will continue or the current prices are more or less stable?
See, three things I just want to highlight here. One, like I said in my opening remarks, so far as the Indian demand is concerned, that is very healthy. And like I said, run rate approximately around 5%, that will get accelerated in the period to come because of the new renewable energy push which is happening in India. But on the other side, like I said, in the global situation in globe, because of the three regions, one is China, the demand has slowed down. The second, overall Western countries, the demands are also not growing. And that has led to the oversupply situation globally, and that has led to the higher import into India. And that is putting a pressure on the pricing of the domestic market. However, the third point, we continued our journey on the cost competitiveness and serviceability to the customers. So in spite of drop of the price, which I've just mentioned, we have been able to kind of navigate some of them through our what you call cost competitiveness and customer serviceability. Going forward, see, two things I just want to highlight here. One, so far as the pricing is concerned, that period, the time will tell us, because in this global uncertain environment, it is very difficult to speak about. However, our efforts on the cost competitiveness, our focus on optimizing our cost will continue. And just want to highlight here one thing. Historically, this kind of a down cycle we have seen in the past also. And every time when this down cycle has come, the second time our margin has improved. And because that is primarily because of our journey towards the cost competitiveness and customer serviceability. So our journey of that will continue, and we will be able to navigate this challenge, which we have done in the past as well.
Sir, can you highlight in terms of the cost optimization activities that have been undertaken, or which are the levers that we are working on?
See, like I said, there are many components into the cost optimization. On one side, your raw material, the second is your efficiencies, and the third is how do you use the different product, raw material product mix into your kitty. And last, how do you service the customers? That also helps you to kind of have a better margin. So these are the three, four things which helps you to navigate your cost competitiveness.
Okay, sir. So that's all from our side. We'll come back in a queue if you have more questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Saket Kapoor from Kapoor and Company. Please go ahead.
Yeah, namaskar sir.
Namaskar Saket ji.
Yeah, namaskar Raman sahab, namaskar Janal ji, and thank you for this opportunity, sir. Sir, when you mentioned about realization being down by 9%, this is the Q1Q realization down or year-on-year effect you have given, and that is on account of our contract getting renewed that led to it, or this is the spot prices that have declined. So some color on how we should read this 9% downward revision in realization.
So, Saket ji, as you rightly said, this 9% down is year-on-year basis, and this is the realization what we lost into the quarter-to-quarter basis, on the year-on-year basis. Right? So that's number one. So keeping that into mind, the drop of 9% happened on our realization on quarter-to-quarter basis, on a year-on-year basis.
So what is then the, even when we look at the quarter-on-quarter basis, our revenue is down in the similar number only, from 796 to 721. So that is another 9 to 10%.
So let me highlight that also, Saket ji. There are three things. One, quarter-on-quarter basis also, the price has dropped by around 3%. Okay, number one.
Okay.
Number two, in this quarter, like I said, some volume loss, also because of the excess supply, some volume loss has happened as compared to the quarter-on-quarter basis.
Okay. In tonnage terms, sir, can you quantify? As you mentioned, it is not significant, but the impact is significant. That is what is to be seen flowing through the P&L.
See, there are three things which happens, Saket ji, on the quarter-on-quarter basis. The Q1 is always a kind of a beyond the seasonality. That means that's a peak period for every customer as well. Whereas the second quarter is lean period for the customer as well. So that's number one. So because of that, obviously the volume on the Q1-Q basis historically has also been in the Q2, the volume will be lower. Right?
Right, sir. On the second point, when you mentioned about the, we are awaiting the final word on the anti-dumping by the finance ministry, honorable finance ministry. So what are being the recommendations there, sir? And if those are implemented, how will it impact the unabated import from the geographies where this is to be implemented? In simpler understanding, sir, you mentioned that we may be benefited. So when we are projecting, as you have told earlier, that MIP did not serve the purpose. So are you hinting to the point that even anti-dumping will not serve the purpose it has been implemented on? Correct me there, sir.
No, Saket ji, like I said in my opening remark also, so far as the anti-dumping duty is concerned, that has been recommended by the Commerce Ministry or by the designated authority of Commerce Ministry, right? And that is waiting for the Finance Ministry approval. Now, whether this will make an impact on the bottom line, we don't know right now, because this always will be dependent on the how the market dynamics looks to be in the future. And the second is, once this gets approved by the Finance Ministry. But if I say in terms of the perception, definitely this will help us in terms of the overall industry by reducing, or I would say that by giving a playing field for the domestic industry to play with the international supply. So surely that will have an advantage. How much advantage? At this point of time, very difficult to articulate that.
Okay, sir. So very, very small point, and then I will ask my next question. Because sir, every time when we have heard about this anti-dumping, there is some impact on the import price, and a duty is also structured. So the report did speak about per dollar per ton basis duty. So we can very easily get an understanding that if that comes into play, what would be the minimum price for which, or what would be the duties paid? So why is this ambiguity that it will not serve the purpose? I'm unable to understand that, sir. if you could just.
No, Sakhaji, I have never said that it will not. So, Sakhaji, I have never said that it will not serve our purpose. I have said it will serve our purpose because this will give an advantage or this will give a level playing field to the domestic industry. Right? That's number one. In terms of quantification, at this point of a time, why we are saying that we should not be able to, or we will not be able to quantify that, because everything depends on a few things. One, how does the demand-supply situation pan out going forward? Okay, what kind of a pricing, because of this duty, the importing exporting countries take their on their account. Okay. The third is, once this gets approved by the finance ministry, then only the impact will be felt. But definitely some impact will be there. How much? It will be seen.
Right, sir. One small point on this, sir. Global soda ash summit happened in the first week of October. So if you could just share some key highlight on how the major players globally, especially the natural soda ash players and the other players who hold a substantial volume are looking into the time ahead. And then one question on buyback, sir.
Sakhaji, like you rightly said, recently the World Soda Ash Conference has happened. And the summary of this I have already said in my opening remarks. First and foremost, there is oversupply situation. The pricing are under pressure globally. And the second is, right now we are seeing some kind of a slowdown onto the new investment at the growth or the new projects. And the third is a focus on the sustainability of the industry. These are the major three highlights.
Right, sir. Sir, as you have spoken that whatever improved demand has happened for soda ash globally also and for the country, what we are anticipating is from the investment in the solar panel line for the solar investment. So in order to reduce our cost of energy, sir, are we also looking for any renewable energy tie-up in the open access or the where which is mandatory now for all the corporates? How are we going to take advantage of the same? And sir, on the buyback front, sir, if you could just allude to us, how did the board concluded at a price of 725 rupees and 300 crore amount being envisaged? Since, sir, because of the change in the tax, the tax incidence now on your investors would be on the realized value. That is, we need to pay tax on 725 rupees and claim the losses on our investment. So that does not hold true for the our shareholders having investment above 2 lakh. So had the board deliberated on the merits of going through the process, how will your shareholders benefit out of the buyback, sir?
Yes, Sakhaji, you rightly said the board has deliberated all the relevant provisions of the new tax law which has been implemented. And based on that, they have taken the decision. You must, if you go back and you see that many of the companies in the past, after this regime has changed or this tax laws has changed, has successfully has implemented the buyback, and this has been successfully been accepted by the shareholders. So that's number one. Second, as you rightly said, this in terms of the amount, you see, depending upon the resources and depending upon the market pricing, the board has deliberated various options, and based on that options, they have decided about this amount.
Okay, sir.
And the last point I would just want to add here, see, like I said, the small investors, as you rightly said, small investors, institutional investors, that they will directly get the benefit, and the other investors like you will get an indirect benefit because the capital allocation will become better. This money is going back to the shareholder, therefore the EPS will improve. Overall, intrinsic value of the company will also improve.
Right, sir. And our investment in solar energy and other renewable source of energy, sir, what is our thought process?
So, sir, two things, Takeji. First and foremost, solar energy requires the soda ash. And the one of the major advantages which we are going to get is the demand outlook or the demand growth in India will be very good. Let me reiterate this point again. See, like I said, even in this turbulent time, Indian soda ash demand has grown by 5%. Number one. Number two, the kind of a global, the kind of Indian government's vision is for the solar glass or solar investments. Today, around 119 gigawatt solar establishment is there in India. And the government wants this to go to 300 gigawatt. A lot of large houses are setting up the solar glass productions. Out of them, some of them are likely to be starting in this year's end, maybe February, March, and the next year the full production will come. Similarly, the other players are also, they are starting, and that will also happen next year, maybe in few more, after one or two quarters. So next year onwards, probably the soda ash demand will improve. Now, let me also tell you one more thing here. In next 5 years, in India, at least we require a extra one, more than a million ton of soda ash requirement will be, demand will grow. So that means from the Indian perspective, this is a very kind of a positive environment for the industry which we are operating.
Right, sir. But my question was particularly on how are we going to reduce our cost of electricity which we use through our investment in solar energy. Means many corporates, we are seeing that they are going through the open access route wherein they are getting solar power at a much cheaper rate and then supplying it to the grid and thereby reducing their power cost. So how are we going to take benefit of the same? That is what my question was pertaining to, sir.
Yeah. So Saket ji, so far as our uses of the renewable energy, we have already invested in the last year renewable energy to the extent which we can utilize. Number one.
Okay.
Because please understand, in the soda ash industry, there is a the process of a steam and power, both are required. Okay. And that has to be produced in a manner so that you can get both the things from the same process.
Right.
So for us, going very significant way into the solar energy investment for the uses of the power into our system may not be that great. But we will be significantly getting an advantage because of this, what you call, your renewable energy demand going up.
Correct, correct, sir. And one question for Raman, sir. I will join the queue, sir. I have taken a lot of time. And I will join the queue and then speak again. Thank you.
Thank you, Vandasani. Thank you. Yeah. The next question is from the line of Abhijit Akela from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, sir. Thank you so much for taking my questions. The first one was actually on these anti-dumping duty recommendations themselves. So from the perspective of the uncertainty that we are still seeing regarding the impact of those measures, is it coming primarily from the low duties imposed on, you know, one of the Turkish suppliers itself, where I believe the duty is only about $17 or so? Is that the main reason for the uncertainty, or could it, is it that there are other countries that are outside the ADD net, such as say maybe China, who could you know, potentially start to become more aggressive in terms of supplies into India? So I would appreciate your perspective on that.
No, very valid, Abhijit, the question which you have raised. See, why we are little kind of not quantifying the benefit. I have said this, the benefit will be there. How much we are at this point of the time, we are not quantifying, number one. Number two, rightly you said that China is not included into the anti-dumping list because there was no import coming from China. That's one. The second is still the process is underway. The finance minister has not yet put their signature on this. That's also very important. The third, as you rightly said, in Turkey, one company, but we don't see that as a major, because there are certain countries where the current imports are happening and they will be probably get eliminated in the entire process. So once this gets implemented, definitely this will have a benefit. How much, only the time will tell you.
Okay, understood, sir. Yeah, thank you for that. And just one other point with regard to our expansion plans for soda ash. You mentioned that in your opening remarks that maybe the greenfield project is running a little bit behind our initial expectations. So is there a revised timeline sort of that we can indicate regarding by when phase one might be commissioned? And would also, you know, be eager to hear your perspective on just at the global level, what are the significant capacity addition and reduction plans that you're seeing for soda ash over the next few years? That would be great to know.
Yeah, Abhishek, thank you very much. Let me first give you my perspective about our greenfield project. First and foremost, as you know, this greenfield project is a very significant long-term strategic advantage to us. And also you know that executing a large size of project definitely have many complexity, right? Various approvals are required and we are in that process. We have got all the major approvals, like we got the environmental clearances, we got all other approvals. Only the land clearances are pending, or land, some portion of land and some portion of the land approved, means what you call regulatory approval from the government is pending. We are working on that. The third point I just want to highlight is that our plan at this point of a time is very clear that we want to complete our both the expansions within the defined timeline which we said. Maybe the phase one will get slightly delayed, but overall, March 30, the vision which we have of around the 1.1 million ton, we would like to complete. Now, just now I've given to the other person that the demand growth which we see, the way we see, the demand growth are significantly going to be much higher. And therefore, the need of the Indian producer to cater to the demand, I think we are on a much advantageous position at this point of a time. So we would like to pursue that. Your last point was on more on the, how do you see the global perspective of this thing? See, first and foremost, last 2 years, 23 calendar year and 24 calendar year, China has added almost around 10 million tons. Broadly, I'm giving you the number, okay? A little bit here and there, but overall capacity, global capacity has been added around 10 to 11 million tons. Current, my understanding is, all the synthetic soda ash producers, particularly China, they are losing money. And therefore, our belief at this point of a time is the new capacity addition will get slowly down. However, some new capacity will also get closed over a period of time in China, and China will be in a position of more of a like a balancing the demand and supply for the domestic production, and maybe a little bit of a quantity to for the import to the country which are natural market for them. This is a slightly longer term view. One more important point here is the new capacity which is getting added is more on the natural soda ash side. So gradually in US, once the demand grows, the new green, your natural soda ash capacity will get added in the US and some portion in the China as well. However, like you know that 80 to 90 million tons of the total demand is there globally. And even if I take 2.5% or 3% of kind of a demand growth globally, that requires around 2 million tons of extra production, and that will cater over the period. I don't see for a long period of time, Abhijit, a very kind of a oversupply situation globally.
Thank you. Thank you. That's really helpful. Just one last clarification, if you'll permit me, sir, a quick one. You mentioned a short while back that we are expecting at least 1 million tons of additional demand to come up in India over the next 5 years, largely driven by solar. And our greenfield also by March 30 is, you know, 1 million tons or slightly more than that. So is it correct to interpret that we are basically aspiring to capture the entire, pretty much the entire incremental demand coming up in the country by then?
See, Abhijit, if you look at today, approximately around 1 million tons is getting imported also, number one, right? And a minimum 1 million ton. Because if you look at it, historically also, the demand growth has been around 5%. Even for a minute, if I don't take a solar, your demand in the next 5 years is going to be around 1 million ton extra. And solar will get added to that, right? Some of the competitors also are going to put up some capacity. And the second is your natural market. There are certain markets which are closer to the India, which will also need to be serviced from the Indian by the Indian producers. All put together, we will be able to supply. Of course, our market share will improve. How much? That all depends on the how the overall demand growth happens.
Thank you so much, sir. That's really helpful. Wish you all the best.
Thank you. Thank you, Vijay.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Darshita from DSP Asset Managers. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, sir, for the opportunity. Is it safe to assume that our volume was flat on YY basis? You mentioned there was some volume loss. If you could just put a number to it, that would be great.
Yeah. Hi, Darshita. Like I said, in terms of the production, our number has been higher by around 5%.
Okay.
Okay. However, our sales was down by approximately around 2%.
First half.
So in the first half, in the complete first half, our production was up by around 5%. However,
okay,
the sales was down by 2%.
That's clear. And secondly, on the 70 to 80 crore of incremental EBITDA that we'll get from the capex that we're doing, will that entire 70 to 80 crore be reflected in our FY27 numbers, or will it be more in a phased manner?
No, that will happen in the 27. Maybe some percentage here and there, but largely that will accrue to the in the 26-27.
Got it. Okay. And our capex will commercialize from some time in the second half of FY26, if I'm not wrong.
Yes, I think both the plants are under commissioning, and I think by in the last quarter of this year, both will start kind of a commercial production.
Got it. Got it. Great. Okay. Thanks. That was it. Good luck. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Saurabh Jain from HSBC AMC. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Pardon me, I joined the call just now. In case you have answered these questions, it would be great if you can repeat those, please. My question is on the anti-dumping duty, which I think GSEL has been talking about in the media before also. So, I'm not asking if this is going to happen or no, but my question would be, if ADD sees an execution and implementation, would you believe that the pricing in the Indian domestic markets can increase meaningfully? And if it happens, then is it possible to quantify what could be the possible price increase? That is my first question.
So thank you. Yeah, thank you, Saurabh. Let me, like you rightly said, we have responded to that, but let me repeat that. See, two things, as you rightly said, first and foremost, that is underway. It is still to kind of a gets implemented and needs a signature of the finance ministry. The second is, yes, that will have an impact on the overall Indian pricing as well as the demand outlook. How much? It is very difficult at this point of a time to quantify. And the reasons of that quantification, first and foremost, how the global pricing will seem to be in the next few quarters. Number one, China is not included into this at this point of how the China, because till now China was not exporting anything into India. So China is not included in that. So that's the second, that how the China works out. But positive part is there are certain countries where probably the imports are happening that may kind of a taper down in a significant manner. All put together, benefit will be there. How much benefit? That only once it gets implemented, we will be able to quantify, or we will be able to give you some guidance on that.
Yeah, that is useful. But what would be the quantity of China imports that are seeing through into the Indian markets as of now? Because I believe the overall imports are somewhere about a million ton or so.
Yes, sir. At this point of a time, 1 million tons is the right number which is given. In that, China presence is almost negligible. And because of that only, their name is not included into the anti-dumping list. Because they, unless you have an import from that country, that cannot be considered for the anti-dumping duty imposition.
That's right, but I think that is more like looking into the history, because how imports were coming into the India in the last 2 years, that has decided what all countries should be looked at. But currently, are you saying that there are virtually negligible China imports that are flowing into India? Because I thought the China imports have increased.
Very marginally it has increased in last 1 or 2 months. But if you look at in 24, 25 or maybe the first quarter, you won't find any very significant amount of import coming from China. How that will shape up in going forward? Because the China till 24, they had a kind of a, 24, they had a, in themselves, they had a significant demand growth. In 24,
yes,
they have grown by around 16%. Their demand growth has been 16%. But however, this year, the demand growth is almost slightly 2% minus than the year-on-year basis.
I'm sorry, how much
is
the demand growth this year?
This year is minus 2%.
Minus
2%. So because of that, I would say that, not 6 months, 9 months, I would say that. Because their year starts from the calendar year, right? So the demand degrowth is around 2%. How this is going to shape up in the future? But one positive thing there is, their construction industry is a little bit reviving. Of course, not very significant at this point of time, but people are still positive about the construction industry.
Understood. Okay, that is useful. My second question is, there is a minimum import price that is already into play, and we saw some sort of margin improvement for some of the other industry players in the first quarter. However, 2Q again, there have been commentaries that there are pricing headwinds and there are challenges in terms of reduction in prices. So what is leading to this price reduction if there is already a minimum import price that is into play? What's causing that?
See, the purpose for the minimum import price has been more likely. This was a price which was a more of a rock bottom prices. And that's a very short-term benefit which has been kind of a visualized by the Commerce Ministry. Or I would say parent industry, not the Commerce Ministry. That prices was very significantly lower than that. So therefore, the major advantage of that, of course, little bit of a kind of a, in the first quarter, as you rightly said, little bit of a kind of a slowdown had happened on the, but overall, no benefit. And I think this has been indicated by us in the last quarter as well, that we are not seeing any significant advantage or any major advantage out of the minimum import price. But anti-dumping duty definitely will have an advantage.
Sure. Any timelines that you believe this anti-dumping duty, if at all, if it comes into play, what could be the broad timeline?
See, generally, depending upon how the finance ministry looked at, generally people say in the other cases it has taken around 2 to 3 months for the finance ministry to kind of take a decision on this.
Sure. Okay. Thank you so much. I'll join back the queue and all the best.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we would like to remind participants to please limit your questions to 1 to 2 questions per participant so that the management take all the questions from the participants. The next question comes from the line of Rohit Nagraj from B&K Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. So first question is on the domestic supplies incrementally. So you also mentioned that on a yearly basis, domestic market will need about 2.5 to 3 lakh tons of incremental supplies, given the growth rate of say 5 to 6%. So till the time our first phase doesn't come in, how these supplies will be met? So are there any domestic capacities which are expanding, or will it have to be completely met by imports? Thank you.
Now, Rohit, first and foremost, as you know that today, because of this global demand supply situations, Indian producers needs to be exporting a lot of quantity. Obviously, when the demand growth of India happens, and this will get diverted to the domestic market. Second, as you know, some of our competition has also expanded their capacity. That will also help to kind of navigate this demand growth. And last but not the least, I think some of the headroom to the industry will be there to ramp up their production, and that will also help to this thing. So this is what my understanding is, that these are the 3-4 steps which will take care of the this gap. And if anything is left over, then surely that will go to the import.
Right, got that. So second, allied question to this. Now, given that Chinese consumption has slowed down during this year and it may not improve to the extent of double digits incrementally, and since they have the excess capacity, is there any possibility of China starting directing their material to Indian market till the time the domestic capacities, I mean the domestic demand in India is growing? And given that there is no history in terms of earlier imports, the ADD will happen only once there is a history of at least few years before, say, Chinese supplies can be stopped. Just a broader thought process from your end. Thank you.
So if you are, just let me kind of articulate the same thing. First and foremost, China, if you look at slightly longer term, okay, China has been, in the past, has been exporting a significant amount of volume into the global market, including in some period to the India as well, point number one. Second, in terms of the cost competitiveness, I can only tell you that the Indian producers are very well cost competitive vis-a-vis the China. So that is also very significant amount of, and the third, which is again very important, till last year, they were almost like a balanced demand supply situation, okay? The result, they have imported some of the quantity from the other part of the world. So will they have a very significant amount of volume to export to India or other global players? Yes, some volume will be there, but not a very significant amount. This is what my understanding. That China will not kind of come and say, okay, I'm putting a kind of a 500,000 ton or 300,000 ton or 400,000 ton to India. No, I don't see that likely to happen.
Yes, that's very helpful. I think just one last clarification. Can we assume that the phase one, given the regulatory process and all approvals are in place, will be commissioned sometimes by say mid 2028 end FY28 or so?
I think Rohit, it should happen, but like I said, the pending point at this point of time is the land clearances or land balance, all approvals, environmental, which is a very significant part of the entire such a large budget, has already been obtained. So hopefully if this land clearances gets clear, hopefully I think we should be able to kind of go in the end of 28 kind of a number. So it should happen. But again, all depends on how do you navigate this land clearances.
Fair enough, sir. Thanks a lot and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Renuka from FWC in Association. Please go ahead.
Hello. Yes, thank you for the opportunity. So largely my questions have been answered, just a couple of them on the realization front. So you mentioned year-on-year realizations have dropped 9%. So currently, if you can give some light as to how the trend has been in the month of October and going forward, is it a larger pricing pressure that we are seeing or something similar?
See, Arunka, if you look at in the, like you said, year-on-year basis, the price drop has been 9%. If you look at on a quarter-to-quarter basis, yes, there is around 3% price drop. Going forward, it will all depend on how the things happen. There are three things. One, if the anti-dumping duty gets implemented, things could be different. If the anti-dumping duty does not get impacted, things could be different. How does the China work on the going forward that has to be seen. So at this point of a time, it is very difficult to kind of say that how the likely scenario, because of this such a high volatile geopolitical situation, to kind of give a guidance on the pricing.
Okay. And just to clarify again, so earlier we were guiding for the bromine and lithium salt to come in Q3, but it has gotten slightly delayed and you have mentioned it will come in Q4 of FY26. So just wanted
yes,
to understand. Yeah.
Yeah, Renuka, very rightly you said. Almost, yes, small delay there because of this unfavorable weather, which you must have noticed in the entire country, and more particularly in Gujarat. Definitely that has led to kind of some delay, but not a very significant delay. And hopefully in the Q4, we will start getting accruing the benefits to us.
Okay, and lastly, apart from the Greenfield Soda Ash project, apart from the land clearances, are there any other sort of regulatory approvals that are pending, or once that is received, the construction is expected to begin?
Yes, Renuka, I think the major at this point of the time is only your land clearances, some land acquisition and land clearances. These are the major, I would say that small things, I don't see any major hurdle on that.
Okay, so we shouldn't expect any other further delay, like by March 28 at least is what we are hoping that phase one will get commissioned.
Now, Renuka, like I said, first and foremost is the zero date will be able to, we will be able to predict the zero date only when we get the land clearances and the land acquisition, okay? Which is, you know, in any of the large projects, these kind of a complexity do happen. And in the past also, we had, like I said in my opening remark also, it has not progressed the way as a management we were expecting this to progress. But yes, if this gets progress quickly, then 28-29 probably we will be able to commission the first part. And hopefully very soon after that, we will be able to commission the second part also.
Okay. That's it from my end. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Gaurav. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. So regarding that bromine project, you know, so I have a question, you know, so given that in the presentation and in the you also stated that the likely margins are going to be in the 40% area. Now, Argyne, which is one of the largest exporter of bromine from India, their margins are 30%. So what explains the additional margins for which you have forecasted? This is my first question.
Right. See, Gaurav, let me give you our perspective on this. First and foremost, this what we are setting up is a kind of an add-on to our existing soda ash salt production facility. So all the costs which are relating to the soda ash production is already there. Whereas in the other case of the competition, we don't know the margin of the competition. But in our case, this is an add-on to the existing soda ash field which we have. And we are reasonably confident of achieving this margin which I've just mentioned to you.
Okay, the second question is regarding the ESOP policy which you have. You know, so 90% of the ESOP, you know, is amongst how many people? I mean, and what was the trigger for you, the three, you know, the senior management guys to sell the shares at around 635? When, see, the shareholders' return has been less than 6% on a 12-month basis. But it seems, you know, that the top management got a fair chunk of the ESOP plan and they liquidated that also at 635.
Two things, Gaurav, in this. First and foremost, this ESOP plan which has been given is widely distributed to the middle level to the senior management. That's point number one. Okay? And this has been decided almost around 2 years, 3 years back. Number one. The second, like you said, liquidation. See, some of the management definitely has liquidated, and you can understand as a professional, we need the resources for our other activities as well. It is not that we have liquidated the entire ESOP what we got or the whatever the holding we have only a fraction of the investment which we have made into this. We have the senior management has sold. Okay. So therefore, it is not. I would not. You should not assume that the senior management has sold the entire. Even the last allotment which has been given to the senior management, there also some of the portion has been sold, not the 100%. And they require the liquidity for their other purposes, other domestic needs.
So when you are saying that it's widely distributed, you know, 90% is among how many people?
It's around approximately my understanding. I don't have the number, but I think this is widely to roughly around how many people?
50-55
people we have distributed. This is the number. Okay. This is from the middle management to the senior management.
And then also, you know, in the past, you know, we have This will be my last question.
Let him complete.
See, I've been a shareholder in this company from last 15 years, you know, and I've been tracking this company, correct? Regarding in the past, about 2 years back, you know, the excess cash, you know, we have been chatting about, you know, how the utilization of the excess cash should be used, and you had said, you know, you are evaluating inorganic opportunities for growth. Now, you know, I think probably Saket also asked you about that, you know, the utilization of the proceeds in the buyback, correct? And when it is not taxpayer friendly for the equity holders now, correct? So what led to the decision to, you know, move away from the inorganic growth opportunities which you were evaluating, where, you know, you had said in the past that due diligence has also been done. And you just decided to pay back that money.
See, Gaurav, two things. First and foremost, our inorganic growth, we have been evaluating many of the opportunities. But unfortunately, we have not been able to close to a deal which is a value creation for our shareholders, first and foremost. Second, our growth journey of either the inorganic or the organic growth will continue. You know that out of the total resources, we are only a small portion we are going to distribute. And we are a cash generating company. If you look at slightly medium terms, we are generating almost around, I would say, 500-600 crores of the cash generation. What we thought is that, we have in the past also done two buybacks. Don't forget that, okay? So we always believe that the value creation for the shareholders are very important, that we try to return some resources to the shareholders in addition to the dividend. And this is what we have done it. In the past also we have done it, and we have done it also. For the growth, the resource problem will not be there because we are a completely deleveraged company. We have the ability to raise a significant amount of resources from the market as well. In spite of that, we will not cross 1:1 equity. Still, we have a lot of opportunity of taking that. Even if I distribute the yearly income, 50% or 60% of the income, we will be able to do this kind of a buyback on a consistent basis, kind of a situation. Okay, so instead of putting this money into the low income treasury, we thought let the shareholders get this money. In terms of the tax friendliness, like I said already, there are many companies, we have studied all those companies, they have successfully done the buyback after this change in the regime, and it is beneficial to many of the small investors as well as some of the institutional investors. So this will definitely have a value creation for the even the larger shareholders as well. This is what our board believes and we believe.
Thank you, Mr. Jivan.
Thank you, Gaurav.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Satyam Agarwal. Please go ahead.
Hi sir, so I just wanted to understand what is the current realization per metric ton and what is the current EBITDA per metric ton?
Satyam, first and foremost, like I have already given the number, basically the prices are fallen as compared to the last quarter by 3% and as compared to the year-on-year basis, then 9%, okay? And EBITDA also, I have already, you have the number. How much EBITDA per ton, or I would say the margin, which is approximately our EBITDA margin is around 24%, which was around 27% in the same quarter last year. 28%, sorry. And it was 27% in the Q1 FY26.
And sir, if anti-dumping duties are being imposed, then there would be some benefit on the realization front. And I just wanted to understand whether it will be directly being affected to the EBITDA, or is some portion would be cut down.
Sorry, I have not been able to understand your question because your voice is a little not clear. Can you repeat your question, please?
So my question is, if there has been imposing of anti-dumping duty by the finance ministry, there would be realization front. So if there is some uptick on the realization front, how much of it will be reflected in the EBITDA?
See, first and foremost, let this to happen, first and foremost, and how much that will make an impact onto the pricing, that will kind of decide. But like I said, already my cost competitiveness or our work on the cost is on the way. And so therefore, I think a significant portion should get added to the bottom line.
Okay. Thank you. Understood, sir.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this was the last question for today's conference call. I now hand the conference over to the management of GHCL Limited for their closing remarks. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Just let me kind of reiterate some of the points which I have mentioned in my opening remark as well as in the questions. As a management, and we have a kind of a history of many years, we have delivered our commitments on a consistent basis. Like in this quarter also, in the last quarter, we have already indicated the prices are on challenging and the overall industry cycle is on the downward trend. And I think based on that, the numbers which you are seeing are the numbers which are true reflecting to our commitment, first and foremost. Second, our growth journey on this business continues, and we are here only to create a value for our stakeholders. That's our mission. And we will continue to do the journey of a growth, journey of cost optimization, journey of better serviceability to the customers, and to create a value for all our stakeholders, including the shareholders. This buyback has been very well thought of by the board and by the management, and this was only a kind of a step towards the rewarding the shareholders, which we have done in the past as well. The dividend and other things will continue. We will do a very responsible capital allocation all along, and we will make sure that gives a maximum return to our shareholders. So thank you very much for all the support which you people have given, and we will look forward to kind of a valued questions as well as a valued input from you people, so that we continue to do our journey and justify our efforts which we do. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. On behalf of MK Global Financial Services Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.